Blog Talk Radio.
Shelly Nunchuck's show with my little furball co-host, Jackie Chankinny. She's all curled up, so cute. She's acting very good, ladies and gentlemen. And you know what day it is. Today is Ninja Sunday. Woo-hoo! Now, I know ninjas are quiet. I do know that. That's part of their persona. Ninjas are assassins, and, well, there's some good ninjas and stuff. But, you know, I just get so excited because Ninja Sunday on my show. And before I bring my guest on, and I'm so wicked psyched. Wicked psyched about my guest. But I wanted to give a little props to an actor. His name is James Hong. The thing is that, you know, boggles my mind. I don't know how the committees out there in Hollywood and stuff to give, you know, the Hollywood Walk of Fame, the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, because James Hong has been doing films and such for over about, I think, 50 years. And there might be a petition that I actually just post on my Facebook page, you know, on there about getting a petition to get him a star on the Walk of Fame. So I'm actually going through his biography, but I wanted to get the name right because everybody would know exactly who this guy is. I mean, it's just something that he has a face that's very recognizable. And I'm trying to go down to the list and as many things as maybe I'll have to do a dedication to him. But he actually played in the cult classic, Big Trouble in Little China. And I'm trying to, like, bring up his page. And I just had it, but Facebook has been acting a little kind of screwy. I've been posting all morning long, and my public posts now, sometimes I have private posts and public posts, and I make sure, you know, you can set it on your Facebook page and look to see, you know, what your Facebook page looks like in the public, and I haven't seen any posts public, so I'm not so sure what's going on, but I posted stuff a little bit about James Hong, and his character, what is perhaps mostly widely known as the immortal ghost sorcerer Lo Pan in John Carpenter's cult classic Big Trouble in Little China in 1986. He also played the eye manufacturer Chu in Blade Runner, and there's like a couple of things he played in Chinatown, The Two Jakes, Black Widow, and 1989 film The Vineyard, but he's played on so many different films. He's been doing it for over 50 years, but I just wanted to give him some props today at the beginning of my show because, well, you know, I think he does deserve it. He just has that character look. I mean, that you would definitely be recognizable if you saw his face. You'd be like, yes, I know who that guy is. So, you know, I wanted to give a little bit of props out to him, you know, somebody that I would definitely recognize myself because he just has that, you know, that face where you can recognize it. You look in the phones going, I know that guy. And it's really kind of cool, too, because when I was, like, reading about this, someone was signing a petition to help him get a star on the Walk of Fame. And it's just too bad that, you know, when people want to see certain things, and like I said, I don't know how the committee does the stars and such out there. I just know what I like and stuff and characters that I like. And, you know, you just see him, you see James Hong, and you're just like, yeah, man, he's pretty cool. Because, of course, in Big Trouble in Little China, there's a lot of slut people, like, you know, James Liu and I think Albert Leung. I'll have to remember that because I'm like, I've been trying to deal with all this technology stuff today, and sometimes I am a tech tower trying to figure this stuff out. But I know James Liu was also in Big Trouble in Little China, and it's just something that, you know, had great, I mean, at the time, I grew up in the 80s. What do you want? I'm like, I like the cheesy 80s films sometimes, you know. I just like going back to some of that stuff, and I just enjoy some of the films because it's fun-loving and stuff, and even the special effects at that time was pretty good. Now, I know they have all the CG stuff today, but, you know, it's really kind of nice to just, like, kick back and watch cheesy 80s films, and sometimes I like to kick back and, you know, put on Big Trouble in Little China and just enjoy it. So what can I say? I like cheesy 80s films. I mean, it's just me, you know. So I wanted to give a shout-out to James Hong. Just wanted to. And it's just, you know, it's just his characters. They're really brilliant. And, you know, I never go by what critics like or anybody else likes. I like what I like. And when I saw this, I go, yeah, you know, with the petition that is going around. And I don't know if these petitions ever, you know, ever really work or not. But, you know, I wanted to pass it around because I think James Hong has been, you know, a brilliant actor in his own right. You know, I mean, it's maybe he's a little bit off the grid and some people won't know who he is, but you would recognize his face. You know, you just see some character actors. He's a great, great character actor in some of the stuff he does, but you would definitely recognize him. And I actually posted on my Facebook page our YouTube video on him. I think there's actually three parts to it, so you can actually check it out. And you know, he's a really great actor, and it would be nice because it was going around saying in the petition, because he's an older gentleman, and they wanted to actually have this done before he passes away. Now, I don't know, you know, before the way it was worded, and I'm like, I don't want to start any rumors. I don't know, you know, his condition or anything like that. As far as I know, he's fine. It's just that when I saw this, it was like, maybe they just want to do it to bring us some happiness. So no rumors starting or anything if you see the petition. It's just that somebody wants it started to honor James Hong. That's all it was, because now if you hear about a petition and an actor's older, they're going to think that's something, he may be sick or dying. No, it's nothing like that. It's just the fact that someone made a petition and wanted to hopefully have James Hong honored and to have him see on the star in the Walk of Fame. So I'm just reposting this. I mean, he is a good character. He is a really great actor in his own right. But anyway, today is going to be an awesome, awesome show. Sundays are actually sometimes my favorite day of the week. And, you know, trying to do all this stuff and talking with people on Facebook and stuff in the morning while I'm getting this all set up is a lot of fun. And especially, I try to make sure before with my radio show, I try to actually, you know, make sure it's all set. Because sometimes, right before the show, there's like little crazy things that happen. And it's a lot to do with technology because with the Blog Talk Radio, sometimes, every once in a while, it's unavoidable. Things do happen with that, you know, that web, the Blog Talk Radio, and you can't get through to some, you know, text, and it's really hard to handle the situation. And, you know, even though it's Blog Talk Radio, I try to be as professional as I can. How much more professional, because it depends on my guests, because if they're really kind of crazy and I have them on the show, I don't know which way the show will go. I really, really don't know sometimes. I mean, with the, you know, Masters of Martial Arts, you know, it tends to be a little bit more laid back, and, you know, we get to learn a lot of things about these masters and stuff. And the one thing, I wrote about this privately on my Facebook page is, you know, I have a funny Boston accent. Really, really, I really talk funny. And I try very hard to pronounce people's names and pronounce things. And I mean it out of respect, because the thing is that I've noticed, you know, in films, you know, and also where people with characters and actors, and I sit there, and even though I can't pronounce it, and I'm like, well, here's an example. The film Airbender, which I think was an abomination anyway, because, you know, of course, my big thing is about the whitewashing that goes on sometimes. Well, not sometimes, but all the time, and I'm looking to see, you know. Here's another example I bring up once in a while. Now, Airbender, which was a children's series, and a lot of people, you know, they may not tend to think it would matter that someone, a young boy, should have been casted that was Asian. So they cast it as a white child. Now, it has nothing to do, and we have to remember this, ladies and gentlemen, the boy that played the lead actor, he didn't have anything to do with the casting. So don't blame the young, he's only like, the kid's only 9 years old that plays it. It has to do with the casting and stuff. So do not be mad at the young kid. You know, it has to do with the casting. So the whole point of what I'm making a point is about an Airbender, the lead character's name was Aang. Okay, now I can pronounce it Aang. A, you know, it begins with the letter A. But the thing is, they were sitting around going, Aang, and I'm just like, what? Now, if I can pronounce the name Aang, come on. They couldn't put that in a film and at least put that right. But like I say, that film ended up being an abomination because they totally, you know, after training a year in Tai Chi and, you know, learning about elements and, you know, about animals and stuff and learning, you know, being connected and stuff and then looking at it. And I did like the series, and it was Nickelodeon. People were like, well, this is only a cartoon. But once again, they went and they actually whitewashed part of it. It's kind of like, you know, I mean, this is why I say I wish I had money for films, because, you know, people that I know that have the experience, I could get those people. So it's something that I know in my heart. You know, it's stuff that I love. Like I said, I never listen to the critics. I love what I love, and you've got to promote what you love. That's what it's about, promote what you love. So here I am, and I'm looking to see. I have someone in the queue, and I'm so excited. It's Ninja Sunday, so let's see if this is my special guest. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Dr. Song, Master Kum Song.
Hi, Mr. Kum Song. Thank you. Welcome, welcome. I feel honored to have you on my show today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's just, I just get so excited because, you know, learning about you and everything, you know, that you're doing, and I just want to tell the viewers out there because, you know, not everybody's into martial arts and everything, but I just think it's an amazing, and once someone's a master like yourself and tends to be, you know, very humble, I just think you're a truly amazing person.
I thank you. I really appreciate the honor, and you make me feel very good this morning.
See, that's, now you understand Ninja Sunday. It's always positive. It's not so fact about it, talking about ninjas. It's just that positive, you know, positive energy. So I call it Ninja Sunday because of that reason, too.
Great. What do you like about ninja? Why you call it Sunday Ninja? Why?
Well, the thing is, I honestly grew up, I never really liked, you know, the whole thing concept of Barbies. I used to tie the Barbie dolls up and everything like that because I was like, I didn't like the Barbie dolls. And I always loved ninjas, but I was always defrayed because, you know, it's kind of like in my world back then, you know, it was kind of like girls should really be playing with Barbies. like guys should be playing, like the boys should be playing with the Legos and stuff, but I love ninjas and I love G.I. Joes and Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow, and it's just the whole thing watching American Ninja and all these, you know, these martial arts films, and it's, I think it's just amazing. I know it's a secret society, but just ninjas, something, do it for me, and I know it's a very respectful thing to be a ninja, and not, I mean, I know they say about assassination stuff, but it's way more deep than that. I just love the costumes. I like dressing up as ninjas, and it's just, I feel like it's part of me, but I'm a good ninja and with basic skills.
Well, the ninja, the word itself, is, if you interpret it to an American, it means to have patience. To be a ninja, you have to have patience. That's the first training. And then also give you a little highlight is that back in the late 60s, early 70s, a very good friend of mine, Sho Kusugi, did a movie called The Ninja. And I actually worked with him, working on some of the ninja techniques and so on, because the creation for the media, for the American entertainment, the ninja movie has to be a little bit different than what real ninjas do train. When you do a real ninja, it's quite boring on the cinema. So Sho Kusugi brought it out and made it real exciting. And in fact, he's most famous for all the ninja posters. And Sho Kusugi, I believe, is now back in Japan, and two sons are doing excellent as an actor themselves. But I was very fortunate to be friends with him and hang out with him and talk about ninjas.
Wow, I do like Sho Kusugi. I love his work, and I kind of know him maybe for American Ninja and a few other things that I did watch. And then it's kind of funny, at first, where there's another film which was done a couple years ago, and he did Ninja Assassin, and it didn't dawn on me he was in that film. So it was like, I like loved it because I want to learn about how Rain trains the lead actor in the film. Mm-hmm. So, and it's like, I'm like, wait, I was like, I kept saying, because I didn't look at the credits, and I was like, I says, who is the lead, that guy? I says, why, who is that? And I finally looked up, and I was so floored. I go, I watched the whole movie that time and didn't realize it was Sho Kusugi because I was so focused on the act. I'm going, oh, man, and this is stuff that I don't realize sometimes. And afterwards, I'm like, oh, my gosh, because this is stuff that I've loved my whole life. And then seeing that, you know.
The Rain, he's a Korean pop singer. He's very famous in Korea. And a lot of the Korean pop singers are coming to the United States and trying to get into the cinema and into United States entertainment. And anytime the producers or directors get into the martial art, a lot of them don't have martial art background. So when they make the movies, they kind of lose it because they're trying to do more cinema acting. I saw the movie too, and I was quite disappointed because does an excellent job putting a movie together, but this came out a little bit disappointing in my point of view. I was disappointed.
Yeah, that's what I hear. It's like, it's mixed reviews. It's like, I think it's because of the training that Rain went through and to evolve into this character. I think that's why I like it, because he really did go that extra mile. And it's like, I know what you're saying, because it's like, here's a little spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen, just to give you fair warning. It's like, you know how they like kind of, you know, kills him off, Sho Kusugi at the end. And I'm sitting there going, I don't know, I think there should have been more to it. Because I was like, I love the death scenes and all the special effects. And I'm like, there should have been a little bit more something to it. And that's what I do. I mean, I like the film and just the whole premise where, you know, people like ninjas, like modern-day society ninjas, and then it's like it's really going around and it's shocking people that it is a real society. And it's still, you know, it still does exist. And I mean that in a very respectful way. I do have respect for ninjas. It's just that, you know, they're silent, they're very balanced. And I think that's why when you mention the patience, see, that's another thing, too. I need to learn more patience and more balance because I think I really have a lot of yang, and I have to get a lot more yin. So that's for me personally. So maybe that's another reason why I like ninjas.
Well, I can verify the ninjas still do exist. And, you know, when you ever see someone walking down the street and they pretend they know karate, go kicking garbage cans or stop signs and going hi-ya to people, those people really don't know martial art. Well, so same as true ninjas are kind of keep very secret. It's a secret society. Martial arts don't go around kicking and performing in front of the, you know, strangers and going hi-ya. those are not real martial artists. True ninjas do the same thing. They keep themselves secret. They're trying to train their body and mind. And movies, entertainment is entertainment. When you see true martial art, I think going back in the late 60s or early 60s when David Carradine played Kung Fu TV series, people mm-hmm. liked it because they were touching a little bit of the philosophy and the true feeling of what martial art meant with a little violence in it. But that was it was so popular. I mean, everybody couldn't wait to see the next week what was going to happen next. Originally, that was supposed to be Bruce Lee instead of David mm-hmm. Carradine. But, you know, that's another part of the story. But entertainment world, it is done to entertain the people. And sometimes they try to get the emotions or try to make the movie more exciting, and that's why there's a death scene. And that's why they did it that way. So when I go to a movie, because I'm involved in movies too, producing, directing, writing, and so on as a hobby, that I look at movies with how many cameras, the lighting, the angle, the story plot, and then as a martial artist, I look at the martial art techniques. I actually tell my wife what the plot is going to be before even has it. I say, who's going to die at the end and why this is going to be that way and how many cameras. So going to a movie with me is very, very unentertaining because I talk too much. And I try not to, but I can't help it. You know, you get so excited watching a movie.
Yeah.
But I can take it and dissect any movies, any story plot, and every martial art moves and so on. And Van Damme and Chuck Norris and Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee, and, you know, and he goes on and on. These actors are doing martial art movements for the camera, not necessarily the martial art. Nobody will do that kind of kick or punch, but it's a great excitement. And Bruce Lee, the same thing. Bruce Lee really didn't like high kicks. I knew Bruce Lee too, as well, because I'm from California originally. So I'm going to mm-hmm. let you talk. It's your radio show. I'm doing too much talking.
No, that's okay.
Go ahead.
No, that's this is basically how it is. I do ask questions, and it's like I like hearing you talk because I'm drooling like that character Homer Simpson, like in the Simpsons. He just sits there when he loves something, and I'm like, I'm literally drooling in my coffee mug right now with the stuff that you're telling me because I enjoy this and having conversation. Like I mentioned, my show's like having a conversation on the telephone. I do ask questions and such, and then if there's ever callers, I let callers in. And to get to start off with, now, what was it like for you growing up? And let me just say, if there's anything you ever don't want to talk about, because these are just questions I ask, saying, I don't really want to talk about it. Let's talk about something else. Just let me know, okay?
Oh, I could talk about anything you want. I'll give you a little bit of background. I was raised and born in Korea. My father is Hawaiian, so I'm a half Korean and half Hawaiian, more Hawaiian than Korean because as I grew up in Korea, Korean people didn't treat, you know, consider a half-breed. People don't treat you the same way because you are not pure Korean. And I wasn't accepted in Korea. And when I went to Japan, I wasn't accepted as a Japanese. And when I went to China, I wasn't accepted as Chinese. But when I went to Hawaii, everybody accepted me as Hawaiian. It was really amazing because when people ask me what nationality are you, and I would say Korean because I speak Korean as well. And then the people in Hawaii says, you're not Korean, you're Hawaiian. And for the first time, I actually felt like I'm home. And then martial art is into my life. I was brought up as a heritage and a culture. So that means I learned to dance, to draw, to sing. As a form of martial art heritage and culture, and because of the fact that I was not really Korean, more Hawaiian, is that, you know, I was picked on with the other Koreans, so I used martial art as a form of self-defense. And in Korea, mm-hmm. everybody kicks. I mean, when you play soccer, it's all kicking. Play volleyball, it's all kicking. So kicking was our second nature. I mean, I would turn off light switches with my foot rather than with my hand. It was more comfortable, and if I was pointing something, I would point my foot. And so martial art, for me, is more of a hobby, culture, heritage. I didn't learn it as a sport, or I didn't learn it purely as self-defense. Self-defense came accidentally. When you have to defend yourself, I realized that I could use these things and defend myself. Your turn.
Hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was like, no, it's fine. Like, it's very laid back. It's different. Sometimes I have really crazy people on the show. So anytime there's a martial arts master, it's a little bit more laid back. And I get very excited, and I'm sitting here because, you know, the thing that I've noticed, like, in films, and I think I'm very blessed, and the reason why I'm very blessed is sometimes people get more into acting in that world, and sometimes they become so self-absorbed, they get lost, and they can fall off, I don't know what you can say, you know, maybe falling off spiritual or something, and they get into a lot of trouble, and they either get arrested. I'm not saying you hear these, like, you know, I don't want to mention any names because, you know, I don't want to badmouth anybody on my show, but you hear in the news about these actors that do fall off in a bad path and, you know, in jail and stuff like that. The thing is, with me, I feel very blessed because people like yourself, and I have a teacher and there's many teachers and masters that I've made contact with, and I know I'm one of the lucky ones because you guys help me. So I think in martial arts, in the stunt world, in the stunt community, it's a whole different ballgame. It is really about respect. And I love the stunt community. And I really wish with all my heart that they would get more recognition. And, you know, having you on my show and wanting to know more about yourself, you know, as you saying growing up Hawaiian, I heard Hawaii is a very beautiful place. And there's people that I know that, you know, I have a brother Z, and he's trained me about, you know, Tai Chi and stuff, and he also teaches dance, and one of the dances is, if I'm saying this, hula, is it, you know, because I've seen them do it, I've seen them perform and stuff, and it's very beautiful, and I try to show, because it's also, men do it too, and I think with the, it's every year, I think it's springtime, and it's something to Mary Monarch. Am I saying this correctly? Something once a year, and it's Mary Monarch, and they have this thing, and here it's like at midnight. So I know people that are up at midnight watching it because Hawaii is a different time, and they have this beautiful exhibition because I think it was for many years in Hawaii, I think it was banned, and they, for some reason, and then they brought it back in all the traditions, and it's beautiful, and it's not just about, well, it's not just about shaking your hips. It is a whole different dance. I mean, do you know anything about that you could tell people about? Do you know anything? Could you touch on a subject on that?
Well, it was mainly, you know, when you think of hula dancing, you think of women. But it was actually for the men. It was a men's form of dancing, and the women did it as a seduction. And that's how you choose your mate, by watching the female dancing and see how, you know, attractive you are. So, you know, anytime I'm attractive to any Hawaiian dance women, hula dancers, I'm very attractive. I don't care, you know. So that does work. It is very seductive. And then back in the 60s, there was a called Banana Split TV show with Kim Kahana. And he's Hawaiian, and he's a martial artist, and he has his own stunt school and everything. And his son, Ricky Kahana, and I were very friends. Kim Kahana and I were good friends for a while, too. So I go back and meet a lot of Hawaiians, and when you meet another Hawaiian, we automatically click. There's a clicking that's there. As a Hawaiian, you feel like you're all brothers and sisters. I mean, there's a relationship that's automatic camaraderie instant there. Same thing with martial art. One day, my wife and I was going walking, and we were at the shopping, and I ran into Chuck Norris, and then I said, I'll be right back, and I'm talking to Chuck Norris. Didn't realize when I came back to my wife was very upset because Chuck Norris and I were talking for over 5.5 hours while my wife was waiting for me. And I just lost time. I mean, time was so fast. When you have somebody that you're interested in, you're talking something that you both understand. Martial art used to be a form of respect, as you said earlier. Martial art used to be a camaraderie. But now it's all business, and it's the friendship is not there. And a lot of times I actually embarrassed that I practice martial art. I'm a doctor by profession, by the way. I'm a doctor and a psychology counselor, and I own several businesses. But like I said, the movies and entertainment, martial art, those are hobbies. But martial art used to be very noble art, but not no more. I mean, we lost it. It's gone. A lot of the things you see on TV and is like who can beat up who, you know. And I see this shows on TV where two people get into a match, and then the winner would flip the finger off to the other guy and give a symbol that he's burying him or something. And I said, that's not martial art. Let's call it something else, brawl, anything, but don't call it martial art, because when you call it martial art, I feel kind of like disgusted. When I go to a different country and I see American flag hanging upside down, I feel offended. And they don't know. They just think that's the way it's supposed to be hung. Also, I'm a veteran. I served in the military. I was a hand-to-hand combat instructor, not by choice. Trust me, I went in military to learn a trade. After the psychology courses in the college, I applied for the mental institution, not as a patient, but as a doctor, and there was no opening. So after many tries at different job, there was no job, I joined the military. And the military to learn a trade that was unknown, which is called microwave, which is very famous, but that time, microwave was just coming out. And so I went in military to learn that, so I thought this would be a great education, get paid and learn something that I was interested in. And once they found out I was a martial artist, I became the head instructor. And so I served the military as a combat instructor. So when I travel the world, I look at American flag, I look at the Korean flag, and it gives me warmth no matter where I go. And when I see someone in martial art, first thing I do is go to a martial art studio. I bow, I show respect, and there's camaraderie. I mean, they take me out to dinner. They welcome me like totally. We could hardly speak a language, same language, but still it's a camaraderie. So when I see martial art being disrespected, I get very, very upset. When I see American flag being disrespected, I get very upset. Korean flag, disrespect. I get so offended when these things are hung wrong way, but people don't know. I have to understand that. And martial art, when I see people using martial art for personal gain, let's just say it that way, personal gain and pretending to be something they're not, that offends me. Sorry to talk so much. Go ahead. Your radio show.
No, it's fine. And I do respect that. And it's like, I know it's like I say about I want to do these ninjas and Mortal Kombat and stuff, but deep down inside, because I've had, you know, it's only like a small percentage compared to what you've had, and it's I do understand. Because the first thing I trained in a couple years was capoeira. And the thing that I learned, I mean, I've always been respectful towards other cultures. The thing that it really, you know when they say the shoe's on another foot, right? When I went to train, because it's African-Brazilian, it was taught in Portuguese. It wasn't taught in English. So there I am in the back of the class, going the opposite of what the class is going, trying to learn, like, the basic Jenga, which is the basics, you know, thing that you really need to learn. And I'm sitting here, and I'm trying to follow everything. And then they give you this martial arts nickname, you're baptized, and mine's name is Pojo Arrows. And it was like, he's going, Pojo, and I'm like, what? That's how he would get my attention, because I was trying to learn it. I did that for a couple years. And then I trained with Master Z for a year in Tai Chi. And I do understand. I said, no, with stunts and stuff, it's a kid around and everything. But deep down, I have very much deep respect for martial arts and many martial arts. And people, I don't like the one question people ask me because, you know, about Jackie, who's the best, Bruce Lee and Jackie. And I hate that question most of all because I look at everyone. I look at everyone, especially martial arts masters like yourself. I say everybody to me is kind of like the same, maybe practically on the same level because they're great in their own way. And I hate when they say, let's compare this and that. I'm like, that's a question I don't like to answer because everybody's great in their own way. And that's why I have respect. And the other thing, too, that I noticed about martial arts, you know, there's like, with stuff where for me personally, I'm against, like, racism and stuff. And the thing that I've noticed where I've gone to watch tournaments, I don't compete, I haven't trained in a little while, but there is one thing that martial arts does. It is kind of like, it kind of fights racism because when you go to that tournament or you go to a dojo, everything has to stop at the door. All egos, everything like that, and that's what you're there for and respect. And I think that's what martial arts does. It's still to this day, and I know what you're saying about personal gain, but I think it also it helps us as human beings to connect with one another to make us all feel the same, on the same level. I mean, that's the way I look at it. And, you know, how did you get into martial arts? I mean, is it a family thing, or is it something that you really loved, or were you ever forced to it? Did you ever want to quit or anything? I mean, what was your experience growing up in training?
My martial art came from my mother. My father did martial art, my mother did martial art, and so my mother basically the one who took me as a young child, very young, and put me into the studio and private lessons, and I took in that same tradition to my family. My wife is a grandmaster, my son is a grandmaster, my daughter, oldest daughter is 45, so that kind of tells you how old I am, and she is only third-degree instructor, but that's only because she didn't pursue to care or cared about advancing herself, so she just stayed a third-degree black belt. And then my granddaughters, I have three granddaughters. Oldest one is 14 years old, and they're brown belts. The other one is 12 years old. She's a brown belt. And I have a four-year-old who just turned five just last week, and she's an orange belt. So it's something that martial art is inherited, and it's something that we do. And they don't have a choice. I mean, they do it. They have to do it right or left. My oldest son, who is one of the champions, and we call him world champions, give you a quick story, is that he hated martial art. I mean, he had to go to school, come home, do martial art till 10 o'clock at night, do his homework, the next day go to school, come back. So his life was martial art. When he was 17, he says, I hate it. And I have a samurai, so I'm into samurai sword. And he says, you can cut my head off, and I'm going to quit. And I told him, until you become a black belt, I said, you're not going to quit. And he said, I don't care. And when they talk to me, like, they have to kneel. And I had my sword in my hand, too. I was ready to cut his head off. and he ran away. He said, I don't care. Kill me. I left. He left. He was gone for 3 days. I found him, brought him back home, talked to him, punished him, of course. And he hated martial art, but he was so talented. His sister, who's older, used to beat him up all the time, so he even hated that even worse. But then one day, he went to a tournament, and there were several grandmasters there, and their sons were competing, and they asked me to compete as a judge for my son, because it was fair that all the grandmasters judge for their sons, and they were going for grand championship. And so I gave my son the lowest score and made him lose. Oh, he was upset. Now he hated even more martial arts. And he asked, after that, my wife came, everybody, all the students came and said, why'd you make your son lose? I mean, he won by a mile. And I said, because he's more talented than that. I didn't see the true talent. I also didn't see him working out to prepare for this tournament. So that's why I gave him the lowest score. I made him lose. And I said, by doing that, he'll be a better student. Oh, they were upset. So next time he went to the tournament, he didn't tell me he was going. He went. They gave him a standing ovation. He became instant hit. Donald Trump came to him and says, can I take a picture with you? Would you be my personal bodyguard? And my son told him, in my family, the father has to all this say-so. So Donald Trump said, okay, invite your father and mother to come to my place, and we'll have dinner together, and I'll talk to him. So we went, and I was very impressed with Donald Trump. And Donald Trump said, your son is incredible. And if I want him to be my personal bodyguard, I have this private jet, private yacht, and when I'm not using it, you're welcome to use it. You know, use my jet anytime you want, travel. And I told my Donald Trump, I says, I really appreciate it. And I said, but I didn't raise my son to be someone's servant. And he was so impressed. Donald Trump took me to his casino, walked me through everywhere, introduced everybody, and told the president, everybody said, when you see Dr. Song, you take care of him. Whatever he wants, give it to him. And then one day, my son came to me, and he was around 30-some years old, and he was at a restaurant, and these four, what we call skinheads who hate Asians, I didn't know they hated Asians too, but they hated Asians, followed me into a bathroom and punched my son, and he had a big old black eye, and there was another Chinese guy in the bathroom, and then the police came, police was all my student. And they asked what happened, and the witness says, I just saw Bruce Lee come to life and put these four guys in the hospital. That was the only statement. So these guys were, four guys were, they were bigger than my son. They were handcuffed, arrested, went to jail, went to the front of the judge, and the judge is also my student. And the judge says, you know, you guys got must be from out of town because you picked the worst person to pick a fight with. You picked one of the best martial artists, a grandmaster's son. And, you know, so I guess you definitely, you know, deserve getting beaten. And the prosecutor come to me, who's also a friend of mine, says to me, we can't prosecute him. I said, why? Because technically your son assaulted them. All four of them had to go to hospital because they were so badly beaten. And so they couldn't put him in jail because they were, you know, they were more hurt than my son would. My son had a big old black eye. So my son comes to me at that time and says, Dad, I am so glad you made me do martial all these years. Because if I didn't do it, I think I'd be in the hospital, either dead or in the hospital. And then my son, did I do good? I said, no. Look at the black eye. If you were good, that wouldn't happen. And my son was like totally shocked. And he thought I was going to praise him. But I just pointed out his defect. And that is why in our family, everybody does martial arts. It's not only for health, culture, to understand what martial art is, but it's, you know, it's for self-confidence. In my school, I have many students who have heart attacks, who had heart attacks, and because I'm a doctor, I'm able to monitor them, who have bad backs, you know, have some kind of injuries. And they learn martial art to feel good about themselves. They don't come to me to learn to how to fight. And I have several students right now that I give private lessons to. And they first came and said, I want to learn martial art for self-defense because they were attacked or something. And I said, then you're in the wrong school. I'll teach you martial art for confidence, coordination, reflex, mind control. But if you just want to fight, go down to New York someplace and fight. Because you want to be a fighter, you have to fight. You can't learn to swim without getting in the water. So if you want to be a good fighter, keep fighting. Eventually you'll be a good fighter or, you know, in the hospital. So as your question was this, yes, all my family does do martial art. They have no choice.
Oh. It's wonderful. And I don't know if this is going to sound strange, but I love martial arts, and I love watching people do it and having a little bit of experience. The thing is, I don't know if I should say this, but I've taken some good beatings, but the funny thing is, I don't want to hit back. It's kind of crazy, you know, that's part of it. And it's like, I think because of one time when I was training, and it wasn't a capoeira move, this, you go into the circle, and they play music and stuff, and you're with someone, and you start off, and you're near the instructor, and you get up, and you play the game in the circle on the rota. And I did this thing, and it was totally by accident. You're not supposed to do this, but it was for, I went up, and I elbowed her on the top of the head, and I was taller, and she got kind of knocked out. Ever since then, I've always been afraid to, like, hit someone, because I hurt her. And I felt so guilty, and this was years ago, and part of it in training in any form of martial arts, you're supposed to kind of hit or kick or whatever to defend yourself, and I'm kind of almost like a wimp. Like, I'm like, okay, if someone hits me, yeah, I'm all like this and that, but I never really want to hit someone, and I don't know if that sounds strange or not, does it?
Oh, no. That's most common in my studio as well. I have many students that says, I don't want to do that to hurt somebody. And that's the right attitude. I mean, that is what makes a martial artist. If you don't want to hurt somebody, then you are a martial artist. If you want to hurt somebody, you're not a martial artist. All right? If you don't have respect for other human beings, how can you call you a martial artist? Talking about the martial artists, I talked to Mark DeCosco, Al DeCosco's son. Mark is now the Iron Chef on TV. And he loves what, you know, he's a well-rounded. He loves every form of martial art. I knew him when he was a kid, and he's grown up to be a fine adult. And the one thing I respect him and his father was most is that they're excellent martial artists, but you don't go around seeing Mark trying to fight somebody or trying to hurt somebody.
No, I love him. I love him. I love Mark DeCosco. He's one of my. Yeah. I got a hold of him on. He finally got a Twitter account that says, "Yo, my capoeira brother," because he did Only the Strong, and I'm like, "Yo, capoeira sister," and I was like, "I love him." I'm sitting here going, "I can't believe you know Mark," because he's just. I was like, I always thought he was so cute and stuff, and I was like, he did The Crow, and he's the only one that came. He did the series, and the only one that's ever come close to doing as good as. Brandon Lee. Yeah, so what more did you want to say? You're like, I love Mark, yeah.
Mark used to train with my son, and he used to basically kick my son's butt, and I love that because anytime someone could beat my son, I encourage it because I want my son to learn that. So Mark and Mark DeCosco and my son hung out together and trained together, and he's an excellent fighter. But Mark is one thing I look at him, and that's anybody who studied martial, I don't care if you're a white belt and only had 2 weeks of lessons or you've been doing it 30 years of lessons of martial art training, is that the respect. If I see someone come to visit my studio and I see them walking in and they bow and I say, oh, you're a martial artist. And I say, what style are you studying? You know, where are you from? Just from that little gesture of bow. All my children, I teach young kids as young as 2 years old. I have several students that comes to me and parents come to me and say, you know, my son comes in into the house and he's only two, but he's bowing to me. And it's a habit that the kids have developed. The first thing I teach all the children and all the adults is respect. I mean, there's no cursing. There's no egos or animosity towards each other. And that's the first thing I teach as a martial artist. So, yeah, Mark DeCosco is excellent. He's a wonderful person. I don't care how busy he is. He will always, you know, talk to you and take picture with you. He loves people, and he loves martial arts.
Oh, gosh. I'm gonna be in dreamland for the rest of the day. You mentioned his name. I mean, I have my favorites. You know, it's something that's like ever since the thing is with I think I kind of like broke a DVD I had. I got Only the Strong. And this was this was like years back. And I wanted to train in Jeet Kune Do, but I really couldn't find it back home in Boston where to look. So I went to a studio where I know it was, and I saw a couple later in there. And then I gotten the DVD of Only the Strong, and every time before class, I would play that. Anybody coming to my apartment, I would play, you guys see what's Only the Strong? And I broke the DVD. I wore it out. I saw it so many times because I had a show. I said, Mark DeCosco's, he's awesome, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, whatever happened to him? And this was like, I think that movie was back in 1992, and I think I went into the dojo in 2005, and I only trained for a couple years in capoeira, but he does many more martial arts, but it's kind of funny because people say that's really not a good form of martial arts, but the reality is, what's the best defense but disguising it as a dance, making it look like it's not martial arts? So
I found that's
the best thing, you know?
They had a human factor, and actually tested scientifically which had the most powerful kick, and believe it or not, they're the one who had the most powerful kick and jumping off with his hand. So that was
on TV. Know who?
And then,
you know who was in that? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just get so excited, but when you're talking about that scientific thing, I saw in one of my other Tuckawaiter brothers, Latif Crowder, who fought Tony Jaa in one of his films, and it's like, I got in touch with him, like I keep getting in touch with him, and it's like, he was the one who did it, and they showed it because it was four guys, and they had him on a platform, and they were balancing it. He was just like, it was one off because he's moving around. He didn't get to put his foot on the ground, and once he went to do it, it kind of made the balance not of a kick, but it's a couple way to kick when it's low to the ground, and you help from low to the ground that it was showing. It was a very powerful kick. So those moves in capoeira is very dynamic, but they're actually deadly because, you know, anything that's formed to make not look like martial arts is the best form of self-defense. I mean, I really think so, you know.
So let's go back to I'm going to lose some chain of my thought. I'm getting old, so I'm going to lose. If I don't say it, I'll forget. Is that my student came to me, one of the young adults, and said to me, asked me, he says, you know, Bruce Lee was the world famous and the best. And I said, really? And I said, really? And I says, he became famous after he passed away. You know that? He says, oh, really? Is he dead? I said, he died a long time ago. Then I said, do you know who Van Damme is? He said, who's that? I said, you know Bruce Lee, but you don't know Van Damme. And I says, when Brucey was alive, it's the same way you think about Van Damme now. When people talk about Van Damme, it's the way they talked about Bruce Lee when he was alive. So the concept, I guess, and I oil paint. So when I oil paint, in fact, I did this morning, is that I draw oil paint of mountains, and I tell everybody, when I die, this painting is going to worth $32,000. So I tell people, save this painting, because once you die, you become super famous, everybody know you. But when you're alive, no one knows you. So Jeet Kune Do was, he trained me. He chipped my front tooth, by the way. As a youngster, my mother hired, Bruce Lee. My mother hired him when he was teaching in a basement of a restaurant, hired him to give me some lessons. And we did a sparring technique. Basically, the lesson wasn't so much drilling, but it was how to fight. He would take put a sock in the sand and swing it on a rope and tell me to defend myself. He would beat me to death with that one. When we sparred, I learned to control. So when I spar, I can throw a punch or kicks and hold it right close to you. I can touch your hair with a spinning hook kick and not hit you. And that's the way I was trained, to control myself. And I was sparring with Bruce Lee, and I did that. And he punched me in the mouth and then chipped my tooth, and I was bleeding. And he says to me, instead of saying sorry, he says, if you don't like being hit, learn to block. And that was my lesson, if you don't want. So in the martial art world, the concept of what martial art is, if you talk to different people, when Ed Park and I were in London, doing the Pink Panther movies, he and I would talk every lunch and dinner. We would spend hours and hours talking about martial art. He was another gentleman that Ed Park was most famous for the Kenpo martial art. He's the father of Kenpo karate, but he was famous mm-hmm. for teaching Elvis Presley. And Elvis Presley was his personal bodyguard and everything. But when we talk about martial arts, no matter who you talk to, is that we get so into the subject of what our views are. And it's never negative, but all positive. And it's all about how to do this and do that, how to kick and why it's so good. So in California, when Chuck Norris and Ed Parker and all these, we had the Steve Fishers, we all get together on Friday nights and we would train together and exchange knowledge. Ed Parker was one who threw the tournament at Long Beach, California. We used to all compete there. We went not there to win trophies. We went there as a camaraderie, to see each other. We went to tournament, martial art tournament, to say, hey, it's good to see you again. Eric Lee, James Liu, Doug Wong, these are all famous, famous people now. But in those days, we were just friends. We were just hanging out together. Chuck Norris would take us out to Denny's and buy us lunch. Things like that is what martial art is about. Martial art is a respect, sharing, and giving each other what they can. It's not so much what I can do for you, but what we can do for each other. And there was a camaraderie sharing everything. I'm sorry to take over your radio show.
Oh, no. I'm trying to learn myself where it's like I know I have a long way to go because it's like martial arts is the help inside. And, in my life, I've been selfish and self-centered in other things, but it's like I do understand about you get more wisdom as you grow old, and I'm starting to understand, and the more I get to talk to someone that has more life experience like yourself and many of the teachers and is in the stunt world, and then it mostly seems like I connect a lot with men. I don't know why. It just seems like that. And, things that you're speaking to me about today, I'll try to remember things, and I try to take it into my life because I'm really trying to be a better person. And my radio show, it does help me in my own way, not just have a guest on the show and like, oh, this person's famous or that. But it's also, it seems to help me, and I'm trying, as a person myself, trying to write better on the internet. And I think for the longest time, I keep using the word I if I'm trying to promote certain things, and it seems like it's really hard for me to write on the internet, and I'm trying to make it, not everything's about me, that if I'm on films, right, I don't know how to write the right way, and I'm trying to learn so it doesn't make it sound like I'm this big star in a film. And it's so hard on the internet, on the show, I can connect with people better because the internet, I always say the conversation is like lost. The art of conversation is lost on the internet. But on a radio show, it seems like I connect better with people. And I wish I could take what I'm, learning from you today and take that and put it into internet and learning how to write better. That's why another martial arts helps you become balanced. And I'm like, man, I want to be balanced like you, like these martial arts masters, and I try to think how you guys think, and it's like, I'm in my 40s, and it's like I still feel like I have so much to learn, and not that I want to give up, but I get frustrated. So when I sit here and talk to you, I just feel so honored because you do teach me. Like all you guys, you do teach me when you're on the radio show, and I'm thankful for that. So, I mean, is there a lesson that for yourself you'd be able to tell someone, any lessons in your life, something maybe, I don't know, maybe you fell off your path or something when you were younger, something not bad, but a lesson you learned from that you could tell people some of your lessons?
Sure. How long is your show? How long is your radio show?
We've got another 58 minutes.
Okay, because it's going to take a long time. My oldest daughter is older than you. She's 45 years old. In the martial art world, I teach people to say that, you know, every time I turn the TV on, Bruce Renner, one of the comedians, died yesterday. So every time I see someone dying that I heard of, known, who were famous, and I say, you know what, martial art is a dying art. People are dying all the time. So life is very, very short. I don't know what your listeners like to listen and talk about, would like to hear about, but you know what? Life is shorter than you think. Every time, because I'm a veteran, I'm a veteran commissioner for New Jersey area. So every time some veterans die or pass away, I have to go show respect at the funeral. And when I'm there, all the other veterans are there. They're all white hair and they're all standing there. I'm white hair too. And I ask them how old they are. And as we have to walk up to the coffin, I said, you're in front of me because you're going to be next in that coffin. I want to stay as far away from that coffin in the back as I can because I'll be in there someday, and you guys are going to be coming in respect to me. And I'm saying to myself, you know what? Life is that short. Every day, your life is getting shorter and shorter. So why live with such a grief? Why live with such agony, with anger? And I tell people, never be angry at another person for what they do wrong to you. Be angry at yourself for letting that happen. If someone is angry at you, it's because you did something to make that person angry. And I make a lot of people angry. And that's because I do things without thinking a lot of times. I just respond with my emotion. We have to learn to control our emotion. We have to try to understand another person, their point of view, what they feel. In the psychology world, is to understand the environment. In other words, the most scary things in our life when you come into the house is when it's dark, when you don't know what's in there or what you can't see. But once the light comes on, you're not as afraid. And life is the same way. Don't live in darkness. Light it up. See things clearly. And that is what martial art is. It's to learn to see things clearly. See things as they are and not be offended or hurt. I mean, every time, just the other day in my town, there was a road rage, and a guy pulled a gun and shot the person for cutting him off on the traffic. And I said, how senseless is that? How useless is that? And when I'm driving, I can't get angry because most of the people in my town are my students or related to a student or a grandparents, aunts or uncle, and therefore I can't do anything that's, you know, considered to be road rage. And sure enough, when someone cuts me off, I feel so, because my heart's beating from slamming the brake. And when I go next to them at the next funeral light, because they're right there, they ain't gone any further than by passing me and cutting me off, it's someone I knew. And they wave at me, and I have to smile. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, cannot get angry over something that people are in a hurry. And I say they're all hurried to die. That's what they're all hurrying for. So, again, learn to open your eyes and turn the lights on, see things, and blame yourself. Never blame another person.
Okay. Well, I do have a question.
Yes.
It's like, you know how, like, in our lives, we all make mistakes, we do wrongs, and we do stupid things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm no exception. I've done stupid things in my life, and you try to say sorry, and you're like, you ask for forgiveness. Because people, they say, you know, forgiveness, and it's things that I've made people upset, and I try to say I'm sorry, and it's like, I guess I can no longer be friends with people, because it's like, it seems like if you say you're sorry, and I'm trying to mean it, I was like, I don't know how to go on, it seems like I have to forget them, because people are always talking about forgiveness, and they say about it in public, but in privately, they don't really seem to mean it. I was like, well, I don't think they're ever going to forgive me. And it's like, it's not for me to say they have to forgive me. But I try, and I'm like, I don't even know how – you can't make up for anything you ever did in your life, any mistake and stuff like that. So I guess you just go on, but it seems like, you know, I don't know how to, like, resolve things like that. I mean, what can
in
you
life, you're always going to run into somebody who's going to talk bad about you. And there, in life, you're always going to offend somebody. And you might, you know, not intentionally, but that's common. That's human. I have many people in this world that hates me with compassion. Mm-hmm. And I have people, many who admire me, compassion. And I say to them, I said, as long as they think about me some way, I'm somebody, I'm happy. You can't make everybody happy, and you can't, you know, so therefore, you don't say you don't have to. In Asia, we don't say we're sorry. You know what we do? We show. As many people, I have actually a person that has, I just use one person, okay, who constantly talks bad about me, constantly tells other people how bad I am, how phony I am, and so on, and I don't say nothing about that person. So those people will come to me and say, you know, so-and-so is talking bad about you. I said, good, Lord, he's talking about me. He's thinking about me. That's great. And they expect me to say something bad about that person. And it's because I don't say it, then they think, well, you know, that person might be telling the truth or that person's a jerk. And most times, 90% times, people come to me and say, you know what? I found out that person's a jerk because he's doing it to everybody. You know, it's just that. So I don't have to justify. I don't have to apologize. If I feel I did something wrong, I show it. All right?
Okay.
There's a kindness that's done differently from your heart. And people who want to accept it would know right away. People who, you know, it's like getting some people are getting a shouting match. Long as you keep your voice down, that person will eventually, voice will come down. But if you raise your voice and shout back, that person is going to get louder. You're going to get louder. It doesn't solve anything. So in the world of understanding with humans, they're very complicated. Animals are better than humans, I'll tell you that way.
Yeah.
So therefore, the compassion of the human is that you have to understand what the human mind does, why they act that way. Most humans are brought up poor, abused, uneducated, ignorant, and you can't do anything about that. You can't change it. You know, just this morning I was watching the news. I saw this child who's out of control, and the teachers try to correct him by putting into a isolated room. I said, that's not going to correct that child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this society does not know how to handle. Now we're going into politics. This country in America used to be the most respected country. And everybody would say, wow, you're from America? That's a wonderful country. And then now it's a joke. What kind of president do you have? What kind of government? It's a joke. Everything's out of joke. It's the pride of the country itself is derated, and so is humans. Each day, every day, humans are getting worse and worse. At one time, people would come up and rob you and take your money or take your jewelry. Now they'll kill you, and then they'll take your stuff. You know, there was this guy, a 22-year-old, and he had a gold necklace, and another guy came up to him with a gun and says, I want your necklace. And the guy said, you got to shoot me first. So he did.
Huh.
That's the way the society is now. It's no longer, you know, respect. Police, when you see a policeman, you respected that authority. You know, you see a police car, you straightened up. If you're speeding, you slow down. Now the policemen are disrespected. I've seen people spit policemen, and I see people cursing at a policeman and fingers at the thing. And I teach at the police academy, and I tell the policemen, I said, look, all the cadets, your job is to how to stay safe and go home, because their job is to deal with all the scumbags in the world, and that's who they have to deal with. You know, we don't have to deal with them. They have to. In the military,
yeah.
I teach the military how to kill. Your job is to kill. You're not there to defend yourself. you're there is to kill your enemy, and so you can go home. With the policeman, I say to them, your job is just defend yourself and not get hurt and go home. And to the society, the American people and the men and women, is to, even children, is to learn to survive the bullies, because no matter where you go, you're going to have somebody who's going to hurt you. You're going to meet somebody who's going to try to offend you. I go to grocery stores, and I go to bank, and I meet tellers and workers, and they're nasty, even the waitress. Real, real nasty. You know what I say to the waitress when they're nasty? I says, will you marry me? And they'll look at me, she'll look at me and says, and they says, why? And I says, because I need somebody to, you know, make my life miserable. And that's my response. Or I have somebody stranger come up, you know, man or woman, come up to me and insult me or something, or they'll cut a line or anything. And my job is to see if I can make that person smile. If I can make that smile, I did my job. And if I see a man or a woman and they're real miserable, I don't know if you ever met people like that in a store or bank tellers or whatever, they're miserable.
Yeah.
And I said to them, I compliment them. I said, wow, you know, I'll pick something great about them, the hairstyle, the clothes. I'll make them smile. I'll make them happy, and I'll walk away. That's my challenge. You're miserable, I'm going to make you happy before I go away. If everybody does that, I guarantee it'll be a little bit better world.
Yeah, I wish, see, those are the things that I really do think about, and I've noticed in stores because, you know, especially when in lines, I think to go to the same places all the time, and, you know, you get to know the people that work there, and I figure anybody that works behind a counter, you know, you're just friendly with them. They're there doing the job. They're not really a servant, and they shouldn't be, they're doing their job, but they shouldn't be treated like dirt. So it's like I just it's something that I tend to see, and what I do is when I'm in lines, no matter what store it is, I give space. I think I'm the only one that does this, so when I'm in the store, is someone that's in front of me, I put some space in between me and someone that's in front of me. And then I notice, like, everybody's up your butt that's behind you, and you can feel that energy. You know, you feel something like everybody's in a rush. So I'm there, and it's like, you know, you have a not, like, staying there forever, like, hey, how you doing? You're friendly. And it seems like anybody behind you, they get mad because you're just saying, you know, how's your day or something like that. And whatever happened to that, whatever happened going into these stores, and it's like, where are you going? We're in a line, you know, and people are so impatient and in a rush. And it's just some, all that's lost. It's just a little common courtesy. That's what's missing in today's society. And I don't know, waiting in lines, it's not like, you know, it's a good way to reflect. You're relaxing. You know, you don't have to do anything. That's the way I look at it. But it's just sad, just waiting in line, no matter what store it is, or even like, I used to drink Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and this was an example. Back home in Boston, I was working at a gym, and at the gym in the parking lot was the Dunkin' Donuts. So I'm waiting in line, and a guy was so frustrated, came in, and this was for a cup of coffee. He came in, and most of the people working there were speaking, they speak English, but, you know, Portuguese accent, because some of them were Portuguese. And he came in and was so upset, and this was over a cup of coffee, and says, you know, you don't understand what I was saying, going on about the whole English thing. And I'm like, I says, I so just, I was like, at that point, I wanted to tell the guy to F off. It's just a cup of coffee. But then I'm thinking, it's like, people that get upset over something like a cup of coffee, get out of their car for a drive-thru, get literally mad and turn red in the store, you know, you can just imagine what their whole life is like if you're upset over a cup of coffee. So I'm learning by just watching instead of just seeing, you know, and giving my input, just watch people. And I learned that's not how I want to be. Because I don't want to have a heart attack by the time I'm 50 over a cup of coffee. Do you know what I mean? Like, little tiny thing. What happened to common courtesy?
Well, it is common. People do have a heart attack for getting upset. That is a true fact. As a doctor, I go to pharmacists, and we, you know, friends of mine, and then the pharmacy would start telling me about his ski trip and everything, and the person behind me is so upset because the fact that he's holding up the line. And then I feel obligated to say, kind of, I'm trying to end the conversation so I can walk. And I'm thinking about the person behind me. The person behind me curses me out, flips me the finger, because the pharmacy is talking about his vacation trip. I feel so bad for the guy behind me because I didn't want to do that. I wanted to end the conversation. But some people just love to talk. So next time you're talking to the cashier, think about the person behind you because they are getting upset. They're in a hurry. Everybody's in a hurry to get into going to the, you know, to the coffin. So in life, you know, you hurry, but it's a human way. We all have to rush. In Europe, the Europeans would tell me, you know, when Americans come to our country and they drive because they like the scenery, they like to see the country. And for us, we drive to get someplace. So they're in a hurry. So in Europe, there's no speed limit. I mean, you go to Autobahn and you go as fast as you can. You get in trouble if you go slow. That's the difference. The lifestyle is quite different depending on where you're at.
That's true.
So as far as you're saying, you know, everybody try to make somebody happy is what I'm saying. In the martial art world, we're talking about martial art. Be more learning martial art for the health and for benefit of self. All my students, if they've had a good time in training and working out, then they've learned martial art. If they go home and they're frustrated because they want to punch someone because they got hit by accident, then they had not learned martial art. In the ninja world, ninja is the art of perfection, trying to perfect the art. It's like painting, you know. You try to paint what's in your mind, trying to portray that so other people can see it. So in the ninja world, it's to perfect oneself. If you can learn to perfect yourself, then you learn martial art. If you learn to make other people happy, then you've learned to have a ninja Sunday. Go ahead.
Yeah, it does make sense. And I think you're right, though. I sometimes do get self-absorbed because I think it's because, you know, working towards a goal and I'm always working on things. And I think it is, you know, maybe it's unconsciously being selfish. And I think, I mean, I don't try to make excuses. Like I said, I'm learning. I'm a work in progress. I think maybe what it is where I live up in Maine, you know, it's not like I don't have a boyfriend. I don't have kids. Like mostly I see on Facebook.
All right,
people,
you young guys, call in.
Yeah.
You got the number, so call her in. She's looking for a boyfriend.
Well, my point is, right, everybody's talking about their families and stuff, and I don't want anyone to feel bad for me because this is my life, and I try not to sound self-centered, but, you know, people showing pictures of their parents and all this and stuff, and it's like I live, you know, with myself, and it's not like I have a boyfriend. I don't have kids. I can't speak with my mother ever again. My father I haven't seen in 20 years. I mean, I do have, you know, extended family, but, you know, I go from work to working out to films. So when I'm talking about all this stuff on, you know, I'm really happy and sharing because this is part of my life. And it's like maybe because of the term overzealous, that's what people say, I get so overzealous on things. And it says, oh, I'm doing this and I'm working towards a six-pack and I'm talking about saying it's not impossible and I changed the way I eat and it's like I'm not doing it with Botox, not a stomach operation, I lost all the weight. And I'm trying to make it not sound selfish, but people saying I'm self-centered. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I mean, I do talk about myself a lot, but it's like I don't know how to express anything else when I'm not the norm of society. When everybody's showing about their kids, I don't have kids. I work on films. So, you know, I didn't think it's ever such a bad thing to talk about myself, and it's, I don't know. I really don't know how to express myself any other way without sounding self-centered with being happy with what I love. I mean,
well,
is that
first thing
self-centered?
Yeah, you need to make an appointment. In my office, I charge $108 for consultation, and I'll analyze you, let you talk all you want, and I get paid for that. That's one. The other one is that for you, I would advise to find out what your listeners are interested in hearing about. Have them write in or call in and say, I want to talk to you about this. Instead of, I say, being, I guess what I'm trying to say is basically this, is that you have an empty hollow spot. You need to fulfill that, and your way of trying to reach that is through the radio. I recommend to find out other people's hollow spot. Fill in there, because you're a public service. Have them tell you what they need to talk about, what they need to have answer on, and through that, you'll fill your emptiness yourself, because you're going to see a lot of it is related to yourself. Just pick one subject of loneliness. Having a companion that you can talk to, share with, everybody needs that. As a human being, we're not able to live alone. We need somebody. We need someone to communicate. We need someone to show emotions and fears and thoughts and emptiness. Everybody needs that. That's what makes us human. When you don't know when you don't need nobody, then you become a hermit and you live in a mountain, in the cave. You know, that part is I guess what goes around comes around. That's where the human started. I guess we're all heading that direction now again, because dealing with society with other humans, it is so stressful. It's killing you. We are living longer, but we're also dying more with more disease than anything else, mental disease.
Yeah, I think that's true, and it's really hard. I guess, you know, it's like you make a lot of sense, and well, I think with the public service thing, I know the thing that people like seem to like Sundays a lot better on my shows because people like yourself, because I connect with the stunt world and the action stuff, so people like yourself, they like Ninja Sundays, I think, better than my Wednesday shows. So it's kind of like, well, it seems like with what I'm doing, since people like hearing about martial arts and stunts, and I really am a fan of that in martial arts, finding more people like yourself for the show. And I think people, that's what people are enjoying. It's my guest that I'm bringing onto the show. So you're someone who probably the listeners like listening to besides me.
Well, in the stunt world is that the people who are in the stunts, believe it or not, they really enjoy it, like anything else, whether it play golf or go watch a movie. The stunt people like doing that. They're very proud. I have a lot of stunt people on my Facebook. We talk back and forth. In fact, that's how I got onto your show. One of your famous, Jimmy, you want to tell who he is?
Who
gave you my
it?
Number? The one who gave you my number to talk.
Oh, you mean Steven?
Oh, Steven? Okay, I'm talking about so many of them. Okay, Steven, tell about Steven.
Yeah.
He thought he got my number.
He's awesome because, you know, I can't even remember. I think he friended me on Facebook. I think it's because my love for ninjas. And he played a ninja. I've watched his whole work my whole entire life, Steven's work, and never knew who he was because growing up, we didn't have the technology on the Internet. So I was watching Steven's work my whole life not knowing anything about him. So we connected on Facebook, had him on my show, and he talks so highly about me, and I'm just like, huh? Because, you know, he's so experienced in everything, and it's like, I was like, oh, my gosh, and he tells people about me, and it's, I feel honored, and it's just, I don't know what to say to Steven, but to thank him that he's actually going out for me, and for him to do stuff like that, I'm kind of like, I just don't know what to say. I'm just so very grateful, and he's connecting with people, you know, for me, so I'm very blessed that I make connections with Steven. I call him my ninja pal because he's a ninja, and I just, like, love him. He's so cool. He does all these crazy things, but he's so humble, and his energy is just, like, incredible. And I'm like, man, I want to be like Steven.
Well, Steven
so
is
awesome.
The one who got me to on your radio show. It was his recommendation, so I like to thank him as well. So when you get a chance, you know, send out an email or something telling Steven that lie to him, tell him you enjoy talking to me on your show. So tell Steven thank you.
I will. I'm going to write to him after the show. He's not even self-centered because he's done all these crazy things and that could get him killed. And he just nonchalantly talks about all these stories. And I'm like, Steven, you were in that film. And I'm just like, I've watched that, and he's like, he posted pictures of everything he's in, and I'm like, you were in that too, and I'm like, I watched him my whole life, and never knew anything about him, and this is the reason why, you know, I try to get more recognition to the, you know, martial arts and stunt community, because I truly believe these people, they deserve more recognition, and I'm praying so with my heart so much. Where I was welcomed aboard the Hollywood Stuntman's Hall of Fame from the founder John G. Hagner, who's been a stuntman for decades. He welcomed me to be a board of advisor on there, and I'm trying to raise money for a new museum, and it's for a memorabilia that's in storage, and try to get funds for this building, not just for the stunt community in the past, but also for present and future, and knowing there's so many people that I like to preserve their work. And it's just through all these connections and stuff. I mean, I don't know how I'm doing it because, you know, I'm broke, I'm poor, but I'm trying. And I'm trying to connect with people, and I have it on my Facebook page. You can check it out after the show. And I love you guys so much. I just, all the stunt community, the men and women, I love them so very much. And there's like no awards for them. They have everything, from wardrobe to makeup and everything, and music and the actors. But when you go to, like, the Oscars and the Academy, there's no awards for the stunt people. And so most of them are martial artists, and they put their lives on the line. And I know they're getting more recognition, but still, I just don't think in those award ceremonies they're not recognized enough. I don't know if you feel the same way I do, but this is the passion of what I'm trying to get them more recognition, you know?
Well, you're doing a good way, so you're starting in the right direction. In the, give myself a little credit, in the stunt world, in the martial art, I'm also a stuntman. I'm known as Kato, Kato Song. Everybody knows me as Kato. And then in the... Yeah, that's my name, Kato. So most people call me Kato. I know they know me from some form of entertainment movie business or something. And in the martial art world, I'm known as Master Kum Sung. That's K-U-M-S-U-N-G. That is not my name. Kum Sung is a pronounced Kum, not Kum. A lot of people say the wrong word. I was in a European talk interview, and the host kept calling him Mr. Kum, Mr. Kum. And the cameraman and everybody was getting bright red and embarrassed. And I didn't understand why, because he was saying the word come. And I, after the show, I said, what do you mean? And they tried to explain to me what that meant. And I said, well, it's pronounced kum. It's kum song in Korean means the best of or the golden star, the golden way. I'm sure you heard of gold star. Well, that in Korea is called kum song. So I named the martial art because when I was teaching martial art, I studied Japanese style, all different Chinese, Korean, and weaponry, sword. Is that when I started doing different styles, if I went to a Japanese, all the Dumuro's, Japanese tournament, Puma Dumuro's tournament, it's all Japanese. I knew what they're going to do because I already knew the Japanese style. So when I would start doing these high jumping kicks and other things, they would get offended and they would say, that's not, you know, karate. But I also studied Sean Rue. In fact, Bill Wallace is one of the, you know, one who studied and beat me up all the time. Super for Wallace. So when we studied, when I did martial art, the reason I studied different arts, again, let's go back a little bit, is my mother put me into art saying you have to know your enemy to defeat your enemy. So I learned Japanese style. I learned Chinese style. But I learned it when it was pure. If you were Chinese style, you did pure Chinese. You would never intermix. If you did Japanese style, you did pure, and the Korean and so on. I used to get basically beaten and abused because I was mixing the style, and I was getting criticized saying, you know, Korean style, I would do Japanese techniques, and that's how I beat them with my hands. Chinese style, I would use speed. Korean style, I would use a lot of high kicks. And weaponry, I would actually create movements with Japanese samurai swords, and they would say, that's not, you know, Japanese, that's not Korean. So I created the name Kum Sung, best of all style. And that's how I named the school Master Kum Sung. And when I went to interviews for the television or radio, anything like that, is that they get confused. My name of the style, Kato sometimes is Dr. Sung. I'm mostly known for Dr. Sung, and then Kum Sung, so I became Kum Sung, so advertised the martial art that I was teaching. So it's all over the world. And the unique style in the Master Kum Sung martial art is that no matter what style of martial art, if you're interested in martial art, it's open-minded. You learn to learn all of it, from the weaponry, and that's what I'm most famous for, by the way. If you go to Asian martial art, they sell all my videotapes on Korean samurai sword. You know, we don't call it samurai, we call it kumdo. It means weapons. Sword, is also known as Chamkam, is Korean samurai. So in the industry, we have a private Korean Sungstar educational center, a private academy, Sungstar, S-U-N-G, Star Academy, which is basically orientated towards teaching the Korean style of education the children. So as young as, let's say, 6 months old, the children all have certified teachers. And we go up to first grade, and these children learn to use computers. They learn to speak the language. They learn to respect. All the staffs, all Americans do a Asian way of showing respect, a bowing and greeting mm-hmm. in Korean language, which is 안녕하십니까. And so we have that, and also have KS Fitness, which is an adult fitness center with a lot of MTVs. I'm sure you heard of Jersey Shore. That's where they work out and did a lot of filming. And I have 5 acres of land that's mine that basically is created to fit. There's 3 different buildings. One is fitness building called KS Fitness. Other one is 8,000. That's 16,000 square feet. And then we have 8,000 square foot martial art building, which is created just for martial art. And then we have 12,000 square feet, which is just the educational center. And I can tell you all about that too later. But in the my world is that I wear many different hats, views, and medicine is the martial art medicine as well as Eastern, Western medicine. Go to that. My wife is an herbist, and she's also a chef, certified chef. And so I'm fat because of her. My son-in-law is one of the leading, my daughter's married to my son-in-law who is a leading heart surgeon, a heart doctor. And my daughter-in-law, my son is married to my daughter, Korean girl who runs the Songstar Academy with my wife. My wife runs all the whole things, the whole business from the fitness center, KS Fitness, to Kumsong Martial Arts Centers, to Songstar Academy School. And she oversees the whole thing and runs the whole thing. And in my life, I was born what you call a gold spoon as a baby. I was a very fortunate, one of the things I was born. And I wanted to learn what it feels to create your own welfare and success. So I actually put $100 in my wallet and traveled the world and build it back up to a point where I'm considered to be successful in the business world, successful in the martial art world, and successful in the medical world. But this is a companionship of my wife who does that. And she's the one who tells me, stop doing that movie or that movie. That movie script does not fit your personality. I'll give you one real quick story. I think we got 5 minutes left. One of the old friend of mine was writing a movie script for Angela Jolie. And he says, when I was writing this script, some reason, your character came into my mind. So I wrote the whole character on you. And so you're going to do this movie with Angela Jolie. So he calls me up and he tells me, and I haven't seen him for ages, and he says to me, I did this. And so I tell my wife, I says, a friend of mine just called and he wrote this movie with Angela Jolie, and I'm going to go do a movie with her, and she just walked away. And I said, I can't do it. So I call him back and I said, look, I'm so busy, I appreciate it, but I can't do the movie. Then he calls me back a couple of days later and says, look, I'm going to send you a first class plane ticket, a limo, pick you up, take you to a 5-star hotel. Come read the script. Come meet Angela Jolie. See everything. And if you don't like it, you got a free vacation out of the whole thing. So come do that. So I told my wife, look, I go to my wife and I said, look, I'm the man of the house. I'm going to do this movie, whether you like it or not. I'm going to go see this, go on this little vacation for 3 days. And if you don't want to go, fine, I'm going without you. She looked at me. She said, fine, you go without me. And I said, oh, I can't go. And I said, look, I'm the man of the house. I wear the pants, and I say what goes. And she's fine. Walked away from me. I called. I didn't do the movie. And when the movie did come out, there was another Asian guy doing my part, and I'm sitting there. That could have been me. That could have been me. And so in our life, it had always been that could have been, I could have been the contender. I could have been famous. I could have been. But you know what? When I meet some of my famous actors and people that I haven't seen in a long time, and they say to me, I envy your life. And I say, I see you on the movie screen. I go to a movie and I look at you and I'm envy of you. And he says to me, I'm more envy of you. He said, I wish I had your life. And it dawned me on that time. That's the American saying, it's always greener on the other side of the fence. That is true. Until you're on the other side of the fence and you see that it's not. So learn to appreciate what you got, because what you got is more precious than anybody else, even the littlest thing.
Yeah, it's true. That I hear many times. And, you know, I am learning because I'm like, you know, about, you know, what stunts and stuff and really realizing, getting into doing it, stepping in the shoes, not saying I'm doing what you guys have done, but started doing some films and it's like, you know, able to do my own little stunts in my own way. They're not as crazy what you guys done. But I was like, man, this stuff really hurts. And I'm like, this is really hard work. You know, not just loving and watching it for decades, but now as I'm getting into it, I'm going, oh, this stuff hurts. Like, really, really hurts. So we're like working on a zombie film, and it was 25 degrees. It's in Maine, and it was a Sunday night, and we were on set till 11 o'clock outside. And I'm, like, getting up, trying to get, like, up on a truck, and I'm a zombie. And it's like, this is so cold, and I'm sitting here bawling up on the ground going, oh, my God, these stunt people. I'm thinking, oh, how do they do this? And literally starting to learn that work is really, really hard work. And every time I get to do something, even whatever, you know, a small role, whatever, it's making me respect you guys so much more because it's hard. And I totally understand what you're saying about the grass is greener on the other side or the other side of the fence. I get exactly what you're saying. So you are right about that. Mm-hmm. I get that.
I have a student that came to me, and his parents own a liquor store, and he's very, I guess, wealthy, you would say. And he came to my studio and says, I'm here to train under you, but I don't want to learn martial art. I come to you because I want to be in the movies. But he said, I'll do whatever you say. And so he came to me and he trained in martial art and hung out, taught him how to do stunts, how to act and everything. For 3.5 months, he's now working on Star Trek, Next Generation. He's one of the crew member. So I have a lot of students that do come to me because they want to get in the movie business. And they are now famous in their own rights in Hollywood. So in the movie industry, it's who you know, because you can't get in the business without knowing somebody. And you can't get your SAG member card until you're acting, and you can't act without a card. So that's the way the industry. It is a very tough, tough industry as far as movie. I produce movies, made, wrote, script, everything. And I'm sure you heard one of them is called The Ninja Kids. I wrote that script. Is that I do it because I enjoy it. A lot of doctors go out and play golf. I just don't see myself chasing a little white ball all over the field. And as soon as I catch it, I hit it again and chasing it again. So I don't play golf. I do things because I enjoy it. Sometimes I regret what I do, but I can at least say, hey, I did it, you know, and that's the way life is. Never regret it. I mean, you know, take chances. Do what you want to do. You want to be on the radio? Be on the radio. You want to be a host? Be a host, because I guarantee you, you won't regret it doing it.
Yeah, that's something, you know. No, don't regret doing it. It's like, I think it's better to love what you're doing. I mean, if you go someplace to a job and you're not happy and you're going to pay lots of money, what is the point of doing that every day? Because your soul or your heart gets kind of like, you kind of feel like, ugh, on the inside, you're making money, but how is your well-being? Because after a while, that is going to affect you. You know,
well, I have a lawyer who's a very successful lawyer, and he has to deal with all the stress, and he actually gave up being a lawyer, and now he's a martial art instructor. And then I have a lawyer that's a partner with me. I also invent. I don't know if I didn't talk about that part, but I invent medical equipment. But I have a lawyer who's my partner, and he's 39 years old. And he fell asleep Saturday night, and Sunday morning his wife found him dead. He was in good physical shape, but the law office gave him so much stress. At 39, he died with no other symptom except stress.
Oh my God!
That's my lawyer. Okay, so in the industry, you have different things in your life, and your life is going to be short. I want everybody, all the listeners, to remember. Your life is short. Person next to you, let them know how much you appreciate them. Let them know that you care. You know, start taking care of all your affairs. Don't wait till it's too late when you're already dead and say, I wish. Don't look back in life and say, I wish. You know, Chuck Norris asked me to do a movie called Missing in Action.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it and I said, nah, I don't want to do it. Now I wish I did it. It was a low-budget film, but it's a cult and it's a famous movie. And I had an opportunity to play in that movie, but I didn't do it. and I regret it. Charles Heston asked me to be on his film crew and do a movie, and I did it for a little bit, and I quit. One thing about me is that I'm very impatient. You'd think I was a lot of patience, but I'm very impatient. I don't like working till 4 in the morning on a set. I don't like people disrespecting me. You know, mm-hmm. That's one thing I in life that I want from anybody is that, you know, I won't disrespect you in return. Don't disrespect me. That's mm-hmm. one thing I would not accept. So respect everybody. And I hope your listeners enjoyed your show today, the Ninja Sunday, and I hope they got something out of this whole conversation, and I hope you did too.
Yeah, I got about maybe 10 more minutes. Would you be able to top off the rest of the 10 minutes of any films that you can talk about and you worked on?
Well, one of the best films, I guess, is The Karate Kid, the original Karate Kid, and Pat Johnson was the stunt coordinator, and Pat Marino was Miyagi. I would talk about that. I would like to tell you that was a hard work, and some was filmed in Boston and everything, and again, Pat Marino, the Miyagi, was excellent. Karate Kid himself, Ralph, was that's one movie that made him a legend, and mm-hmm. I like to see him more. He's an excellent, excellent actor. Then the other one, The Karate Kid, the woman, Swank, Hilary Swank, she mm-hmm. actually didn't know martial arts. She's a dancer, but, boy, she came out like a trooper. And now she's a superstar herself, and I got the chance to meet these people, hang around the sets. Some of the scenes that with the Doberman Pinscher growling, I was surprised how tame and friendly that dog is, but the dog can act. You tell him to be mean, the dog became mean, and I was so impressed. But he was the gentlest puppy I ever seen. Pat Johnson has incredible mind. He's in California. He did Buffy the Dragon Killer, I guess. Well, Buffy the
Vampire Slayer.
That's it.
Like that. Buffy,
yeah, he
yeah.
did that one. Pat Johnson also did the Mortal Kombat, Power Ranger movies. He did karate. But, you know, Pat Johnson is a martial artist that was originally under Chuck Norris. And so, you know, it's all connecting again. It's who you know. In the movie industry, it's a story plot. The one who wrote the script, The Karate Kid, excellent martial artist himself. And when he wrote that, he put a lot of thoughts into it. It's not all about sex and violence and killing. You know, it's about mm-hmm. teaching something. And that's what I miss. And nowadays, movie, you don't really see that too much. I like to watch old 1920, 1950 movies. You know, we have a movie channel that I watch all the old movies. And it could be black and white, you know. I love those musicals where they dance, sing, and perform. Mm-hmm. Incredible, I mean, I know. What is it, Jim Cagney? Cagney is the one? He's a judo expert. Yeah, he's a judo expert. Yeah, he's a master in judo.
Wow. Oh, my gosh, so, I did not know that.
See, we're talking to me on the phone. For your radio, I give you all the information. I can give you all the information, all the other entertainment world. But the films I like the best of all the movies I like is the Karate Kid movies. I don't like Mortal Kombat. I don't like the other movies. I do love the Ninja Turtle one, the original, first two. After that, my son did two and three. He played all different characters in that movie. So my son is actually was a famous actor himself. You might have seen him on called Action Pack. It's a TV show about martial art actions. It's called Action Pack. He was one of the actors mm-hmm. in that movie. And then my son was also called overseas to do a movie, Asian movies, because he's that good. And he doesn't like it.
Yeah,
now he runs
crazy.
Now he does.
Yeah.
He runs my martial art business. So he's take care of all that. He's the head grandmaster of that.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow, when do you have time to sleep?
Believe it or not, I don't. I get a couple hours sleep, and then I draw the oil paint, and I love to sing. I love Frank Sinatra songs, and one of my close friends is a Elvis Presley impersonator. He's an excellent singer. His name is Tony Destro, and he looks like Elvis. He acts like Elvis, and he has a lot of things from Elvis. His lifestyle is Elvis. When you visit his house, it's like visiting Elvis' house. So those kind of people I hang out with, they're friends of mine, and you know, as well. And he did one of my movies where he played Elvis, and he sings live, so he sounds like Elvis.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. You're going to think this is crazy. It's just, you know, if there ever a day came where I think ever getting married again, I swear to God, I don't want a big, huge wedding. I want to be married by Elvis. You know how you go to Vegas? Mm. I mean, I've never been to Vegas, but, you know, you go to this little chapel, Elvis marries you. That's like, you know, not all this crazy spending and stuff. It's like, you know, having it, you know, there's some friends there, and it's like you just show up, and there's no expenses, really, and you have a nice honeymoon.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
it
you
is.
Don't owe money after that. It's crazy, but.
It is. When you get married, a lot of people, one of my European students emailed me, and he says, do you marry for love? And I said, no, you marry for a purpose. Find a person that can set the same goal in life, because marriage for love will fall apart. If you have a purpose, love will grow from that. So marry not for love, but for a purpose. In your life, have a purpose in your life. Have a meaning. And that's my sign-off to your radio show, and I thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed talking to you for an hour and a half. And,
I cannot believe it. It's like that much time, and I just want to thank you so much. I feel honored, and I hope I can have you as a guest again in the future.
Well, after we hang up, tell me how you did. You know, either email me or call me and tell me how I did, how I sound. I don't know how I sound, so I'm always very sick of my voice.
Oh, you can always listen to the show afterwards because it's archived, so you can listen to any time, and I'm pretty sure we got pretty good energy on today's show.
Good, because there's two things I don't do. I don't watch any movies I did myself. I don't like to see myself on film. And I don't like to listen to myself after it's been done already, because I can't change it. Because when I watch myself on the movie, I said, I could have done that better. And if I listen to myself on the radio, I said, I could have sound better. Or I should have said that. So I hope listeners understand that you and I kind of winged this. We never even talked about it. The listeners, I hope you forgive me if I talk too much. And again, thank you for inviting me, and have a good rest of the day.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay,
thank you.
And all right, I'll email you. You have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. Oh, boy, this was such an awesome show. Once again, that was Grandmaster Kum Fung, K-U-M, so that is the correct way to say it, so I think I really did say his name the correct way. It was awesome, such an awesome, I'm telling you, Sundays are my awesome show. It's an Indish Sunday, and hopefully you'll have him on my show again, and I'm just looking forward to more guests. And everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for supporting my show. Thank you so much. And, you know, like for me, I truly believe anybody that has a dream out there, you should definitely go for it. You have nothing to lose. So I'm going to end the show with the song that is actually one of my theme songs for my show. It's called Battle Song, and it's by Horace Cordeliza and his beautiful, lovely wife, Sonari, and it's going to be in our film called Falkir, and just on Independent Films. Everybody works as a team and works together. If you want to check it out and look at the fundraiser, if anybody can help, we are in need of funds for the film, for Falkyr, F-A-L-C-Y-Y-R, and the fundraiser, you go there and actually says fundraiser, and anybody can donate, and if you're shy, you can donate anonymously on there when you go check it out, but, you know, it's something, it's a wonderful, wonderful song, and it's something like with any music, it sets the mood for a film. So this is something that I believe is going to be during a whole entire fight scene in Falkir. It's called Battle Song. So everyone, once again, thank you for tuning in, and I look forward to more shows, and thank you very much, and have a good week.